up on you.
How are we gonna restore 15 to 20 million jobs? I am your future.
You have the power.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, our broadcast signal serves the entire tri-state area, southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware, and it's always great to hear from people who enjoy our message and people who are helping us promote good things for America and American-made. I ask, as always, that you contact family members, text them, tell them to tune into 860. They can do it in the car, on the radio. And by the way, you can hear us from anywhere in the USA simply by logging on to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. That's every Wednesday at 11 a.m. However, we will have rebroadcasts of the program today up around 2:30, and we send it out to thousands of people. So we'll be able to get our message out, and our special guest will be introduced in a few minutes. But first, I want to say a special thank you to our panel members, Mark Andel, who is the founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Connolly, our national small business advocate, Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration, and our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, and I'm Michael Blihash. Before I go to our very special guests, as we gather on this Wednesday, December the 15th, we're continuing a program, our declaration of December as National Small Business Month. Now, it's really good to see that this effort is growing, and it's been mentioned now in many local newspapers, lots of radio programs, and posters are up in stores, in windows, and on cash registers, announcing December as National Small Business Month. And of course, from today through the end of the year, people will be doing a lot of purchasing for the holiday season, so there's still time to encourage your local store or print out a nice colored poster and give it to them and ask them to be part of our effort. They can get the poster right on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com or NationalSmallBusinessMonth.com. Do spread the word, because this is getting very interesting. And by the way, I also want to mention, we had a very nice response from the ad that appeared in the Metro paper in Philadelphia promoting support your local businesses during December, National Small Business Month. It was right there on the front page. It did a good thing. And my thanks once again to Frank Schaller for all of his help. Well, today, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest, Jason Kilmeyer. Now, Jason's known for a lot of things, and he knows about the Buy American Made campaign, the supply chain issues, and the importance of America and American workers. Jason lives, works, and writes from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I know that Larkin Connolly is from that area, so I'm sure he'll be very happy to speak with Jason today. Jason is a political commentator and a national security expert in emerging technology applications. Jason is also a supply chain expert, and boy, Jason, perfect. Our conversations and very good. Believe me, I tell you, this guy is going to be somebody that we want to hear from. Jason was the manager of a federal supply chain risk management program, and he served a wide range of logistics and other challenges for the government agency. So I'm really very, very pleased to see that Jason is doing his thing. He also writes for outlets including Fox Business, The Daily Wire, The Pittsburgh Tribune Review, and many, many others. I'm honored to welcome our special guest, Jason Kilmeyer, to our broadcast and thank him for being with us today. Jason, let's hear some words of wisdom from you.
Michael, let me just first say I am honored as well, especially to talk to the people of Philadelphia, a city that I love, and thrilled to be on with you. And even since our last conversation, where I think you and I really hit it off on the phone, I've dug more into the campaign and just appreciate the work that y'all are doing.
Well, we're doing our best. And there's one thing, Jason, if only the national media would come on our side. There's a big problem that I suffer from because everything that we put in the papers, we have to pay for. And the same thing with some of the small business associations. They think that it's controversial to say things about small businesses. How about the malls? And I say, well, the malls are loaded with lots of small business as well. There are other bigger stores. They could become confused and upset with us, who they are advertising with on a regular basis. So, I mean, we're trying to do our best. And luckily, we have about a 20 radio programs that repeat my weekly commentaries from the Saturday show during their broadcasts and also promote the Buy American Made campaign. If the national media got on board, this would be a very, very special situation. The fact that you're here with us today and know the situation with our supply chain and what's going on, I'm very interested to hear from you. Jason, as you look at what's happening at our ports in the United States, they said that there must be at least 15 million containers. Normally in the course of the year, there's about 26 million to 30 million containers coming from overseas to America. But there's about 15 million of them sprinkled around that have not been able to be shipped, unloaded, whatever. And that's why we're seeing this big difficulty. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, and Michael, I would say that is true, and we're seeing it even further up in the supply chain, right? So if we think about it in terms of what are the various tiers of the supply chain, all the way back to the raw materials and that overseas manufacturing, those early elements of putting products together, mining raw materials, extracting resources, what we saw were disruptions, not just from COVID, but as 2021 started, we saw the Delta variant slow down manufacturing in places like Malaysia and Bangladesh, and then in China again. And so when I say not just from COVID, I meant that original wave, right, that caused those disruptions. But across 2021, we saw those things kick in. And then we saw a variety of countries, the United States included, probably over-vector a little bit in terms of some of the subsidies it gave out. And that disrupted our labor market back here. At the same time that a country like China was pursuing a zero COVID policy and dealing with energy shortages. And so what we've seen is vulnerability at every step of the supply chain exposed over time in the past 18 months to 2 years of our lives. And we're starting to understand those vulnerabilities. But Michael, you asked specifically about those containers. And so let's talk a little bit about that. As those things are unloaded, those longshoremen essentially wait for work orders. Companies need to want to get their things off of ships and bring them in. And so what we're interested in the supply chain world is not just, hey, what hours are the Port of Long Beach guys working? There was a political announcement a month or so ago about, hey, they were going to extend the hours they were working, but is there short-term warehousing space? Are there short-haul truckers, right? Is there space for these containers to go? Is there flexibility for how empties are returned? So we're seeing a snarl at every level. Again, the early causes were disruptions further out in the supply chain across the world, but primarily China. And then, two, a dramatic overall increase in what Americans were ordering. You throw those two factors up against the trucker labor shortage here in the United States, and you end up with the pain that we're feeling now.
And we're all feeling that pain. You know, I went looking for some supplies for Christmas decorations outside on my lawn, and the person said to me, no, we haven't had them. They were expected in August, and nothing ever came. We have no idea where we could even trace it for you. So I said, okay. So I fixed the other stuff up and put them out, and that's the way it goes. So the thing that we are always trying to do is to return to some sort of a 50-50 balance of the products. We understand how important it is to be part of the global economy, but we also have to understand that we need jobs for our people. We need those programs returned to the schools so that our boys and girls can have knowledge of what they really want to do in the future with their life. Yes, we want to have a global economy, but we also want to have an economy where we ship stuff from America out. On the Delaware River, I see container ships coming in. They're almost down to the bottom of the river, bottom of the boat. They leave where the containers are on the ship and they're high as hell. So it doesn't make seven. It doesn't make any kind of sense. Jason, there is a gentleman who is going to be very happy to talk to you. He is from your area. His name is Larkin Conley. He is a small business advocate. He's part of SCORE. He's been on our panel for a good 10 years, and he's a man who discussed the supply chain. Larkin, can you welcome our special guest, Jason Kilmeyer?
Good morning, Jason. Jason, how are
Larkin,
you?
Larkin, looking forward to talking to you. Fantastic.
Great to have you on. Great to have you on the program. A couple comments. First, be careful just how friendly you get with Philadelphia. I might remind you that I lived in Philadelphia for 10 years after being born and raised in Pittsburgh. And it took me about 2 weeks to learn that you do not go into a bar where you don't know anybody with a Steeler jersey on. you're liable not to return out of the bar.
That is a lesson passed down through the generations through oral history here in Pittsburgh. You are correct.
Well, I've experienced it firsthand. I'm living in St. Augustine, Florida. I've been all over the East Coast for oil companies and a variety of employers, and I desperately miss Pittsburgh. I think it's a great place to raise children, to raise a family, and I do miss it horribly. And I have two brothers there, and my presence has been demanded by them for the last year and a half. I haven't been home in almost 2 years, so I'll come quickly. I'll find out what bar you drink in, and we can sip a glass of beer, maybe.
Sounds like wonderful news.
Yes. I applaud what you do. I have not had an opportunity to do a lot of investigating, but to get a little bit away from the supply chain, I have been preaching to the politicos that will listen to me in my area, that I think on many grounds, the country is completely out of kilter. But we are totally out of kilter when it comes to our 18-year-old citizens. You know, they can fight in a war and, almost sacrifice their life in defense of the country. They can borrow $10,000 to go to their freshman year in college at a critically low interest rate, but they can't borrow $10,000 to start a small business. And I think that is critically wrong. And you want to talk about an element of this country that I think is in a position to really work harder and try harder. And an entrepreneur at 18 is something to really behold. I've known a handful of them because they kind of work. They're the kind of people that when you ask them when's the last time they went on vacation, they said, I can't even spell that word. So, but I welcome you. I'm very proud of my Pittsburgh heritage. Born and raised in the shadow of the Highland Park Zoo on the east side of Pittsburgh, East Liberty, Highland Park, and miss it horribly.
I know right where you are, and I'll tell you, one of my jobs in college in the summer was I worked for a landscaping property management company. And so one of those tall apartment buildings over in Highland Park at the top of the hill, I laid the brick for most of their semicircular entrance there for all the fancy cars. And let me make a point too, Larkin, related to what you just said. So I think about that same example of the 18-year-olds, the 19-year-olds, the 20-year-olds, who we used to treat like adults. And we're dealing with that around the ports right now because there is a federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration regulation that you have to be 20 years old to get your commercial trucking license. And so what I think about is we trust a 19-year-old or an 18-year-old to go overseas and to drive a Humvee around Iraq or Afghanistan or these dangerous parts of the world. So why not, with the additional or appropriate extra training, grant commercial trucking licenses to these younger Americans? And again, make sure they're trained the right way, make sure we adhere to all the right regulations, and start to recharge this economy. When I'm talking to small business owners, and it sounds, you mentioned you do a lot of work on behalf of them, here's what I'm hearing around Pittsburgh. How much more can we take? We were forced to shut down when Target and Walmart and Amazon were all allowed to stay open. And then we're finally allowed to reopen, and the federal government has created a labor shortage. And now we're dealing with supply chain issues and inflation that impact small businesses disproportionately. Let me give two examples there. How do these supply chain issues impact them? Well, if you're trying to offload off of one of these major ports and there are backups, the companies that are the carriers are going to prioritize your Amazons, your Walmarts, your Targets, who have a $30 million contract versus a small business who has a $500,000 contract. At the same time, every single penny increase in the fuel process is going to impact that small business disproportionately. It flows not just how much they're paying at the pump, but every stage of the manufacturing process requires fuel. And so I'm talking to small business owners back here in Pittsburgh that are saying, we're not sure how much more to take, but it feels like everything the government's doing is almost more supporting the big businesses who rely on outsourcing. And so when I'm talking to folks out here, we're going, COVID exposed. Maybe we don't want to buy our medicine from a country like China. Maybe we don't want to be dependent on getting sensitive personal protective equipment that our doctors and nurses need on a country who's not going to be upfront about certain risks or is going to prioritize their own people. And so that's really what brought me around to kind of following you guys over to America's Workers Radio and really, enjoying kind of what you guys are advocating for.
So, and I wanted to kind of ask you a question. I want to shortly tell a story. Yesterday I went in, I want to put a new roof on my house, but I'm not ready. There are a lot of different things at play, but I thought, inflation, I'm sure the asphalt tiles are going up. Maybe I'll go buy the number of squares that I need and put them in my garage and then have them put on whenever I'm ready and save that kind of money. And I went in. Well, guess what? Those roofing tiles are already up 40, 50, 60%, and depending on, and as the guy said to me, depending on how much asphalt's in the tile. And I said, oh, now it's starting to make sense to me. The value of a barrel is up 60, 70%. And he said, what can I tell you? About 40%, 50% of these tiles that you want to buy are made out of asphalt, which is crude. So obviously the prices are going to go way up. And those are just another one of those examples of how this inflation affects us that you really don't think about. I wanted to ask you a question. It would seem to me that all of those ships, I came in from New York City the day before yesterday, flew in to Jacksonville, but unfortunately my wife swindled the window seat from me, and she wouldn't stop reading. I'll have to look out and see if we still have boats, ships floating outside of Savannah and outside of Jacksonville. The last time I flew in from D.C., there were 40, 50 ships out there just floating in the water. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen as we were banking into Jacksonville that I've ever seen. Didn't see it this time, so I can't comment. But it would seem to me that we're somewhere along the line, somebody's going to get whacked. Because you think about that stuff sitting out in the on these containers, and I own three stores, and I've got a full container of summer furniture out there. When they bring the container in, I've got to pay for it. But I think to myself, no, au contraire. Aren't the containers already owned by the store owners? Don't they own everything that's in that container? They've already suffered a huge loss, plus they haven't paid three times the freight, which I guess they pay when it's landed. Have I got that right?
Yeah, so I think, and I just want to make sure I explain it very precisely. I think the answer is yes. But so the logistics firms and the carriers, right, the folks who own the individual containers, right, that container space is what's now going for a premium. Their margins are good, right? And even though some ports have established penalties for carriers who leave containers on ships for too long, that doesn't necessarily act as strong enough of incentive for them to unload any faster. Again, because they might not even have short-term warehousing space. But the way to think about this for a small business is if you've got your stuff there, you just want that one or two containers, right?
Right.
The delay in timing, even if you've already paid that exorbitant price, the delay in timing is the tax, because that is lost unrealized revenue. There was an example in the New York Times a few days ago of a company who didn't get its Halloween supplies in time. So that is unrealized gains.
The company isn't opportunity.
Yeah, and so that's the way that I try to explain to people. I was just in Savannah actually on Friday, and the backlog there is also improving. And then there are some additional mitigations we're seeing. For example, it appears that they're going to use a little bit of federal land in Georgia and South Carolina just to allow some empty containers to stack up. Most ports have a one-for-one. You take one out, you bring an empty back. And in normal times, that makes sense. And not doing that could create some hurdles 2 or 3 months from now. But the reality is, at least between now and the holidays, you want to get as much in there for retailers and ultimately consumers as possible. So as you mentioned, in Jacksonville and some of these places, we're starting to see that time break. We're starting to see it maybe start to improve. The reality, though, underneath that, is that each of the mitigations that are allowing that to improve are still at this point resulting in extra costs both for the small businesses and the consumers. The higher cargo prices, the retail companies right. That are big enough to charter their own boats or fly their own planes. So that's kind of where we're stuck right now.
So, but here's what I'm saying, I think is a critical economic element of this that I don't think we've taken into consideration and may not have hit the economy yet. As that ship, container ship is floating out there with 700 containers on it or whatever it is, the contents of that container, as it's floating out there, unable to get to shore to get the inventory to whoever, who owns that inventory at this point?
Oh, usually the endpoint company does.
I would say it's paid for already.
Correct.
So
exactly.
It's not like the guy's waiting for this content to get there so he can buy it and put it on his shelves. He already owns it.
Exactly.
He's
so think about having that.
He's already suffered the consequence of having to fund inventory that he can't get his hands on.
Exactly. And then think about that. That constrains the cash on hand for payroll at the exact same time that employees are all facing 6.9% inflation. Or you've got that, right? Why do we call it Black Friday? You've got from the day after Thanksgiving to Christmas to sort of quote unquote, right, become profitable for a lot of these retailers. And now they're missing out on these dates. And that doesn't mean there's going to be widespread, you know, toy shortages for Christmas. Things are eventually getting there. It's just, it's costing these small businesses the opportunities. And that is being reflected in smaller than average discounts, right? So if you think about Black Friday as a microcosm of what you're saying, those businesses have less that they can put on the shelves, despite the fact that they'd already sunk the cost into it. They have less that they can put on the shelves. There are families who are dependent on Black Friday. Those moms don't want to wake up at 4 in the morning to stand outside a Target. They do so because they want to get that consumer gadget at that great price.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And so that is an unrealized, another loss. It's something we don't think about as those percentages sort of dwindle. But another way to think about this is, and you made this point well about the cost already in there. We really order a lot of our goods for the next season. So think about how back-to-school clothes are in stores by, like, mid-July, right? And so when we've got these delays, if things don't get there by a certain point, that product just becomes unusable. And so we're going to see a lot of waste, which small businesses can't afford to have. And we're seeing people go towards the Amazons and the Walmarts because if they run into that unreliability at their small business, then they're saying, okay, well, at least I think Amazon's going to get it to me because I read these articles about how they're chartering planes and hiring new drivers. And that, again, diminishes the number of people going to small businesses. It starts a cycle. And that's where we're really seeing this vulnerability with our widespread foreign supply chains. It harms these small businesses at the same time that I think it's ultimately harming our national security, given, again, some of the things we've seen over the past couple of years and just the general development of great power competition.
Larkin, let me turn to Mark Andel for a minute. This is Mark Andel. He is the founder and big promoter of the Made in America store. Mark.
Hello. How you doing, Jason? Great to hear from you and about you. I read up a hair about you, but good morning, Larkin, and Rich, I believe, is on, and Mike. Larkin, I've got to say first, I think I passed you in the airport Friday, if you were in Baltimore.
I was in Baltimore. Why?
It's funny, you had a Pittsburgh hat on, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah, my buddy goes up to you, and he starts talking to you, picking on your hat, because, Jason, we're from Buffalo, so I flew down to Tampa to see the Buffalo Bills game, which I shouldn't have done. But anyways, Larkin, that was my buddy's picking on you. I said, who was your buddy over there? He goes, I didn't know him. I was just picking on his hat. So then I go, boy, Larkin, you lost some weight, so I text you. I think it was funny. We passed.
and by then I was already to my gate. But listen to me very carefully. My wife and I were sitting there having lunch, and obviously a plane full of Buffalo Bill fans landed.
That was ours.
Making the transfer to fly to Tampa. So they
That's
were
so
all
funny.
Standing in line in front of the Chick-fil-A, and I walked over to the front of the line. It wasn't a hat. It was my mask. It's a Steeler mask. And I went over covering my mask, and I stood at the front of the line, and I pulled my hand down, and I said, excuse me, everybody in this line, and there are 60 people in line. Excuse me, if you're wearing blue jerseys with red animals on it, you're not allowed to eat here. As a matter of fact, you're not even welcome in this airport. And they're all looking at my
I love it. But Jason, I don't want to take from that. I had to slide it in. But Jason, I own General Welding and Fabricating, two companies in Western New York. So our motto is "You dream it, we build it." So that gets me in a lot of trouble. We're a trailer manufacturer. Do work for oil mining and military work. And then I started the Made in America stores 11 years ago, which are 100% Made in America products. We're at 10,000 products now and support 500 privately owned American businesses. So everything you've said is point on, and I respect. So we've got the pandemic. We've had deep freeze at Texas, Suez Canal blockage, the election, and then throwing the mask mandate and the vaccination mandate. That's hurting big companies. Moog's in my backyard, and they're going to have a walkout January 4th. So I said we had 20 years of change in 1 year, right? And I talk about rapid inflation, product shortage, and worker shortage every day. I've got two radio shows, but So I'm living in the metal industry. Our steel went from 47 cents a pound to $1.58 a pound right now for mild steel, A36. Stainless is tripled, if not quadrupled, price-wise. So for we're in the retail, commercial, and industrial. So for us, and then you add the skilled worker shortage, which I sit on boards of six schools and try to give kids a purpose and get metal shops, wood shops back in schools. So I think we've got a lot in common, you know, to say the least.
Yep.
And but with all these shortages, you know, you had touched on the PPP, our safety items, our health products, and our defense. Again, I do work for Northrop Grumman. We build a defense simulator trailer called the Joint Threat Emitter System. Trains our pilots. But the pandemic woke us up. I've been with the Made in America movement. I've been leading the charge for about 11 years. But it woke the country up, and we're talking about shipping containers. And Larkin, I believe it's 20 or 24,000 20-foot containers on a ship, roughly.
Wow.
You know, so there's a ton of containers when you've seen them sitting out there. My point, Jason, a lot of it is, I love it because I support 500 Made in America vendors, and my vendors are 100%. My concept and core value happen to be 100% Made in America, which everybody can't follow. But I run military projects, so I wanted to make we're the only one in the world. I've got four or five brick-and-mortar stores in Western New York and our website. But our vendors are doing very well right now. They're running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's like God hit the reset button on America for the Made in America vendors. So I couldn't be more happier for our vendors and our mission and our movement. We know it's got to be 50-50 fair trade, but there's so many things. I told people to buckle up probably at the beginning of this year and kept saying buckle up for 2022 because we haven't seen nothing yet, no matter what they try to sell you on TV about the outcome of this. And for me, it's trying to sell a job to a residential owner that's now 3 to 4 times more than it was 12 months ago. I manufacture trailers, so a residential trailer, a 6x12, used to be, I could sell it at $29.99. Now I can't even build it for near that. I got to sell for $6,000. So a lot of problems coming up for the economy. And just questions for you. Do you agree, you know, with what I just said, one area? Yes, we're more dependent on foreign goods than ever, but this is a reset button for our Made in America companies. It just isn't sexy enough for the news, and they're not. All my 500 publicly traded companies, I'm going to tell you, are not publicly traded, not one of them. So, you know, we're not putting money in anybody else's pocket, but they're good people, a lot of mom and pops.
Yeah, I tell you what. So here's what I think businesses, big and small in America, are calculating. They need predictability. And you've got China, who has rolling energy shortages in the east of the country, right? That southeast is, and, you know, kind of along the east coast is where they do a lot of their production. Then they've got zero COVID policies. Now we just saw a major Chinese firm delist from the stock exchange because we decided to try to enforce some basic audit requirements for the first time since we passed that law like 20 years ago that they should be. How do you plan as a company with that degree of instability around the world? And so I think what companies are doing in terms of that reset button are saying, wow, we see that news out there. We see the Senate having just passed the Uyghur Protection Act, which bans any American company from using slave or forced labor from Western China in its supply chains. And then we all know about the intellectual property theft that took place. So there's this moment where I think companies are going, it isn't just about, hey, short term, do I need access to that market or can I deliver a slightly cheaper price on this individual good? But these are major business affecting, bottom line affecting decisions, and they all point people back to the United States. So I see that as sort of that reset you're talking about. And then I'll make a similar point, right? So we talk about steel. That impacts so many industries, one people don't think about.
Yes.
Campbell's Soup uses a bunch of steel in the cans. So that cup of soup, that can of soup that, you know, has been cheap for years, that itself is going to go up. And so I agree with you. I think we're buckling up right now for a 2022 that is going to see inflation persist, that is going to see consumer pain persist, small business pain persist, because each of these individual commodity prices, when I read about those, hey, there was this jump in, you know, Q3. I think steel was one of the most in-demand products out there, you know, in manufacturing overall in any industry. You go, those higher prices mean products at the ground level are more expensive 2 months from now, 3 months from now, 4 months from now. So, yeah, I see this pain is going to continue. You know, opportunity is out there. But, again, it's often those who can afford it the least that we're still seeing get hit by a lot of these changes.
Right. I want to bring up that so I sit on the Boss Snowplow Advisory Board. Boss Snowplow, I'm a Boss Snowplow distributor. They're from the UP, Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I've been selling Boss Snowplows for 32 years and really close with their team. And Boss, there's 175 distributors. I work my way up to be top five. The hard way over the last 30 years, but they locked in steel for 2 years, and they thought they were set. They were one of my only companies, vendors, that only had a 1.5% raise. Everybody else, Cam Trailer, CarMate, whoever, they're up 30 to 40% increase, right? They called a surcharge. But Boss thought they were set by having 2 years of steel locked up. Well, they went to call their steel in, just like would happen with all the banks if we called our money in at the same time. They didn't have the steel, so they only got 25% of the steel they were sitting on and owned because the company sold it out on them. So, you know, the GMs, the Fords, mm-hmm. Are also buying. There's a lot of hoarding going on now. And my point is, I sold a Boss snowplow, say, for $6,000, $6,500 installed in August. It went up $1,600 since August. My price that I'm offering over the counter is $1,600 more from this past August. You talk about inflation. You know, and then next year, can they get the steel? Now, Boss was 90% made in our country, in the UP, mm-hmm. but there were certain items that weren't, and which was the wiring harness for the vehicle. They chose to go overseas, which happened to be China. I always, of course, picked on them, be the Made in America man, and they left. But now they couldn't get, so for Chevys, we can't put plows on Chevy trucks, let alone the truck shortage that's out there because of the computer chips. So the person ordered a truck in June, waiting it for you know, in October here to plow snow in November, December. They can't get the truck, but we can't get the harness, the one component missing from installing a Boss snowplow because they're stuck on shipping containers. Then Boss decided to fly some in. Well, that's 10 to 20 times more the money to fly a few in. So you can see how this all this trickle-down effect, but this is happening now, but you go move into next year for Boss that doesn't have steel enough to build next year's inventory of 35,000 plows. So you can see where this is going, and there's no light in sight for a while. This is a long; these are tough roads ahead of us.
I'm with you, and that's what I tell people. You know, it's funny. You talk about the snow plows. There's also, around the country, snow blower shortages being reported, right?
Yeah.
And so think about people who then are having to do it on their own, and then a throttle cable or some basic element is missing. But you add that across 5,000 units, and all of a sudden, that becomes a problem. And so where these things will continue to percolate throughout the economy is hard for us to predict. What I tell people from a supply chain or a logistics challenge is this. This is America. We have agency. And just like you've seen some of your customers do, we have the ability to attack these supply chain problems. It could be short-term regulatory relief, you know, right? We could consider the use of some additional federal land for storage in some of these areas. We could consider loosening other commercial trucking regulations. Maybe we just allow an extra 2 hours a day to be worked. Now, I don't want those guys to fall asleep on the job, right? But if they're idling for hours at a port, maybe we free up that little bit of extra time. Those truckers can make a little bit more money before the holidays and people get their things. And then on January 2nd, we reconvene. These are things that are within the purview of the government. Where we could see supply chain action begin to relieve these bottlenecks. But I'm with you in the absence of that action and just in due more generally to the complexity of the global supply chain, we're going to keep getting surprised by these things. You can type in almost any consumer item and there's some article out there about a shortage for it. And to your point, there is only so long that these companies can afford to pay the higher prices at the commodity level before they have to start laying people off, before they have to start turning down orders. Right. One of the things that I'm sort of encouraging people to really think about is, you know, expect more surprises from overseas. we are seeing, as we approach the Beijing 22 Olympics, we are seeing, you know, the formalization of a rift between the U.S. and China. We are seeing increasingly aggressive action from Russia. That element, that added element of uncertainty, but again, and then specific actions by those countries, natural gas flows to Europe, right? Other moves from China in retaliation, for say, our skipping the Olympics or these number of other things that we've done, there's a predictability in being closer to home that I think is going to look a lot more attractive over the next couple of years.
You know, Jason, that's part of our agenda, getting more and more stuff to return to America. 30 years ago, in one of my commentaries for the holidays, I said, you know, 35 years ago, majority of what was sold in America was American made. And it began to come a little bit at a time, but now it's reversed to a point. It has to stop because too many of our people, they're living in poverty. They cut the trade programs out of our schools, and we have to do something about it. It's time for real leadership to lead, not just to, you know, argue in Washington and make rules and regs that are going to do nothing for the long-term stability of America, but start talking about different things that are going to make it better for the schools or demands on the schools to put these programs back so that our industries can once again blossom. It's up to the American people to have this gold rush of American made. The thing at the port in the last 6 months or so has opened the eyes of more people than we realize. People are saying, oh, I didn't know that. I started to look at the label, and in very, very tiny print, it now says made in wherever. Not like it used to be, made in New York, made in wherever. But the thing is, we're killing ourselves with our own leadership doing nothing about it. Jason, I want you to meet another great person who has been with us. In fact, when I saw your picture and saw his picture ready to go up on the internet, I said, they look like they could be related. And that is Rich Loges, who is the principal of RJL Technology, a man with many opinions. Rich, welcome our special guest.
Good morning, Michael, and listeners. And Jason, thank you so much. I connected with you on LinkedIn.
Spent some time,
so you'll see a connection. I always like to read bios of our guests, your work experience. And, you know, it's really impressive what you've done and where you've been, you know, working at one of the largest consulting firms in the world and the jobs and duties you were tasked with. And, you know, as I'm taking notes, listening to everyone talking here, and Michael Larkin and Mark and our great audio engineer Henry and most of our listeners are probably totally sick and tired of hearing what I'm about to say. But since you're a guest, I'm going to penalize you today and bring you into my, you know, Rich Loges torture chamber. I can summarize in a singular word, one word, everything and encapsulate everything we talked about today. I heard you mention, Jason, regarding a lady waiting for her drugs coming in from China and goods that are overseas. I'm in the world of business technologies. Half of my orders are probably floating around right now in the Pacific Ocean, okay, as I wait for them and my customers wait for them. Mm-hmm. And I don't get paid until they ship. So all of this here, I can summarize it in a singular word, and that word is utopia. You don't need to check labels. Who cares about checking where something's made as long as you can get it droned into your lap while you're eating your ice cream and watching Monday Night Football, right? Who cares where it comes from? Deficit? No problem. Let's just go print more money. No big deal. Inflation? What inflation? People are buying houses 30, 40, 50% above asking price with cash. What inflation? Don't worry about it. Just go ahead, print more money. And so we can summarize all. So right now, what we are experiencing in the country is yet another anecdotal exhibit of evidence that every utopia always crashes and burns. And that's what we're going through now. Now, we're a show about solutions. And in line with what Mark has done, whom I always say is a pioneer in Made in America. I finally wore Mark down, and I told him, Mark, you got to expand into Florida. Mark and a friend, they've done it. They've expanded in Florida with more to come. So because we're about solutions, is it a realistic solution to go and tell the public, go and read and understand export-import, go read you know, how this all works? No one's going to really do that, right? Because, number one, they're just not going to do it, right? They're just not going to take the time. So what's a real simple solution? And it's something we've adopted here. I ask everyone as they're coming into Christmas, do you guys, you know, hey, so-and-so, do you typically look at where a product is made? And I will tell you, Jason, it is a virtual, almost 100% certainty that everyone will say no, that they do not look where something is made.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a behavioral issue, right? And mm-hmm. and now as you talk about China, you know, the Chinese are not in the business of being liked. Chinese are in the business of force, being feared. So they don't need to fire a shot. They don't need to launch a missile. They don't need to fly a jet in restricted airspace. All they need to do is say, we're just not going to send the goods to America and to Germany and to England and to Australia and every freaking where else that people buy. So that's what they understand. You mentioned Russia. This is not a, these are not nations that understand diplomacy. They understand force. And yet we in the, mm-hmm. But because we are in our utopian stage, we find ourselves essentially begging to have these goods sent. So I'm trying to find the silver lining in it. And I think you pointed it out, Jason, in your last comment. Is there going to be, and these are, you know, my words, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but is there going to be a behavioral shift amongst Americans in taking more of an interest in where they get their everyday goods from? I don't care if it's clothing, you know, your computer paper, or your medications. And I think the answer to that question is going to define us for many years to come, whether that behavioral shift occurs. If you're seeing it, I would love to hear about it. Because if it's happening, I think it's just happening scattered bits and pieces.
Yeah, and hey, Rich, let me think of, as I answer here, let me also just say, I think, right, the work that you guys do with RFID and barcodes and those other unique identifying technologies that allow companies to know where their products are, and just, you know, I think people don't understand how ripe an area of innovation that has been in the past couple of years, and just we're seeing that change on what are the digital right indicators around our physical products. So I'm a big believer in what you and your company are doing. What I am seeing right now is less an idea that people are looking at the label, to your point, out of a, let's say, the sort of old school Made in America vibe of the 70s and 80s. What I'm seeing people say is, we as a country are leaving ourselves vulnerable to the exact people we do not want to be vulnerable for. And that feeling of dependency, Europeans who said, we're going to embrace this energy revolution, and an America that cancels new oil and gas leases on its lands and then has to ask for OPEC and Russia to increase pumping. That, to me, that disconnect between the utopia and the hard reality at the gas pump is where people will wake up. And I also think that there are some historical parallels between the coming shape of the Chinese regime, right, which has a choice. It can be authoritarian or it can be great, but not both. And it's choosing to be authoritarian. And they're gonna ruin their own rise by that embrace. But that regime and companies who do business with it are going to look very different, I think, 50 years from now in hindsight. And I think people are starting, the wheels are starting to turn on these realizations. oh, wow, we really have entered this era. Wow, this type of conflict really is possible. Wow, we do not want to have to depend on sensitive goods and semiconductor parts from countries we may or may not be able to trust. And that's where I think people are starting to wake up.
Well, as my dear grandmother, rest in peace, would always say, from your mouth, Jason, to God's ears. You know, you're saying this, and you know, you mentioned about prescription medication. I had this exact experience last week waiting for medicine, and a lady was, you know, going crazy at the pharmacy because the pharmacist was saying we don't have your medication that you need is nowhere to be found in any of nearby pharmacies. And she demanded to know why. And I heard the pharmacist say, because it's made overseas and we don't have it. And so while the lady was waiting, I waited for her to cool down. And I asked her a question. I said, you know, your medicine's coming from China. And she said, yeah, I know that. I found. And I said, so why is it that you don't know that, right? And I didn't ask her that to criticize her, but I asked her, why is it that you don't know that, though, where your medicine's coming from? And the answer is that there was no need to ever know it. It was always available. It's always there, right? U.S., you know, first world luxuries. It's always available, Jason. But the problem is it's always available until it's not.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden, as has happened in every reported instance in the 5 million years that human beings and all their forms have roamed the earth, that utopia crashes and burns in her personal life. And I don't criticize her. I understand, and what I'm saying is I know why. I understand why we don't. And that's why I'm, you know, not to make this about the last president, but it's why I'm, you know, I'm pissed off at Trump and the idiots that he had in his campaign. Because for all of his flaws and what he may or may not have done, or the fact of the matter is that the United States amongst these rogue countries were feared for those 4 years because we are not in the damn business of being liked. And that's why I'm pissed at Trump, because the fact of the matter is that when he went to the Chinese and the North Koreans and the Iranians and the Russians and all these other places, those countries looked at Trump and said, this guy's crazier than we are. And that's why they said it's probably better to just have peace than war. And we had that going for 4 years, and now we don't.
Jason?
And let me say, I think that the absence of a credible deterrent has implications around the world. And one of the things that we've seen in the past number of months is the types of international events we would not have thought possible even a few years ago. And so as the world and the recalcitrant powers and the adversarial powers sense the decline of an American deterrent, they're going to push those boundaries as far as possible. And I think that can create a cascade of destabilization that I'm personally very worried about.
And, you know, I had a recent conversation with my somewhat liberal son. He said he wanted to pay for all of the economic shortages that we have by reducing as much as half the defense budget that we have in this country.
I'll tell you, the defense budget is expensive. I understand the criticisms of the waste fraud that happens in that department. I understand people who say, hey, those industries have leveraged lobby too effectively. But what I tell people is, mathematically, the defense budget is not one of the long-term drivers of our debt. It's not even in the top two or three. And quite frankly, if things don't change in terms of federal spending, our annual debt service, the interest we pay in our debt, which I believe is already the eighth or ninth largest federal line item, will end up passing how much we spend on defense, I think, within a decade. And so there is a reordering of American priorities that needs to take place as it relates to federal spending. And again, just like I think on some of these supply chain issues we discussed today, I think if we don't embrace some change, we're in for some rude awakenings not too far down the road.
Wow.
No question.
Jason, you've been unbelievable. I have to tell you, I wish you are running for some major office because you know what it's about. You've been in the trenches where it needs to happen. We don't have real leaders. They get elected, and the next time you see them again, it, you know, maybe in the flesh, if that's possible, is when it's time for re-election. We really don't have people that come into the communities and know what's happening in the communities to see the people that helped elect them. They don't understand what it is to have a real job, to live in a real community, and to suffer. You know, if the community is going down, they're suffering. They're paying the taxes. They're, you know, taking care of their kids. They don't understand it. If you heard some of the responses that I get from the political people, you would be sit in amazement. Like, Michael, Buy American can be a very controversial issue because we're now a global economy. So I said, well, what are we supposed to do? Have Americans just sit back and do nothing? Sit on welfare? Because it's easy to pass welfare. All of these national programs that they are passing look good. We're borrowing money. It looks good to people. They're getting bonus checks and everything else. But that's not the way America was successful 30 and 35 years ago. It was a little better, much better, in fact, where people had jobs, they had stability, they were able to save some dollars. They were able to look out for their family, not with the fear of going bankrupt, but with the knowledge that work is going to make us independent and work will be able to allow us to pay our bills. Jason, I hate to say, the music is playing. That means we had a one-hour get-together that I think was very historic. Jason, I hope we'll hear from you again and again and again. We will have a copy of today's broadcast up on the internet. I'll make sure that you get a copy. Thank you for being with us. Look forward to talking to you real soon. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm asking all of you to go out and support your local businesses. No matter what they sell, go out and support your businesses. Tell them about National Small Business Month and let them come to our site and pick up a poster, because everything that we can do to promote one another is helping us to make sure that we have a future, and a good, good future with that in mind. Jason Gilmeyer, thank you so much for being with us. Larkin,
thank you,
Rich,
gentlemen.
Mark, Henry, may God bless you, and may God bless all of you for all the good that you're doing for America. Check out those labels and try what you can to purchase American made. Until we get together this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, stay well and be happy.
Jason, thank you for making Pittsburgh sound good.
Amen to that. Thanks, guys. Merry Christmas.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Jason.